and welcome to episode 256 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
He's a writer of atomic proportions. It's Tony Esmond.
Yeah, inboxes today, baby cakes.
Oh, as well as like delivery and stuff. And this week, we're also hugely pleased to be joined by the amazing artist and creator of the Peruvian cyberpunk books, Manu Lima and Trujillo. I hope I said that right. It's Gustavo Vargas. Hello.
Hey. You're right.
Hello, Gustavo.
Hi.
It's a long time coming. A lot of people have been looking forward to this episode because you've got quite a following of fans since certainly since you came onto our radar.
Yeah.
So
all right, too.
Yeah, we're seeing you everywhere.
Got so you. Yeah.
Sorry for that.
No, we've been meaning to get Gustavo on the show for quite some time, so he's here now. So be prepared to learn an awful lot about his work and how he comes up with the crazy ideas he's got. Because we've talked about his, we've talked about his books on there. Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. But how are we all? The sun is out, and despite being a little under the weather, Guns is out, aren't you, Dan?
So, yeah, Guns is out.
Yeah, I'm out. I've didn't update Vanguard this week to because I wasn't very well, as you know. But we're back on normal schedule next week.
Yeah,
good man.
So sorry that one fan who reads.
You've been sending us pictures of something in your fridge. Was it a crunchy dessert that you day want to eat because otherwise you can't at the moment because you shit your pants?
Yeah, I'm not going to, but there's a risk involved, which I'm not prepared to take. Which I think most people can understand.
Yeah, I think understandable.
Yeah, because you're worried that the crunchy dessert will actually go past its sell-by date. That's what you're worried about, isn't it?
It's kind of very tense, kind of Jack Bauer 24 type situation. It's like ticking
every time
down
you open the fridge. It's actually sitting up staring at you. You turned this picture of it earlier, isn't it? Sort of there.
Yeah. I'd love to see like a sort of 24 sort of boop, boop, boop. Sort of like there's Dan, there's his fridge, and there's.
Just slamming the fridge closed, screaming, no!
Man's got to get home before his £1 dessert goes out.
Personally, I like the chocolate buttons one. But
I do have your address. Oh, I might just keep sending you desserts every day.
That's fine.
Okay. I actually did some baking this week, but we won't. This isn't the show.
Here we go.
What?
What did you bake?
I managed to find flour. That is the rarest thing of all.
It's
like a bit of a rarity.
Yeah, it's a rarity. It was like I found the Holy Grail. Jesus. I made banana bread and it was absolutely banging. Do you want to make something of it, Tony?
Oh, no. But you better have some when I come over your house in a couple of weeks.
Oh,
save some for me.
Here we go. There might be some live audio from that disaster in a couple of weeks.
Vince had to take his seeped up V8 down to Bartertown. Sort of haggle.
Do you want cocaine? No, I want flour. Yeah. Oh, mate, sorry.
Yeah, Jesus. It's like water in, what was it, the Book of Eli? Yeah. That's like a currency.
I know it's in that.
Oh, you should.
That's fucking great. You'll love that, Tony.
It's a great film. Exactly. Do you know what else is great?
Sorry?
Do you know what else is great?
Me.
Comic House.
Yeah, Comic House. And Tony. And Tony. Some of Tony's books are on Comic House. They're our sponsor, and they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference. The difference is... they're awesome.
We're awesome.
Well, that's probably why they sponsor this show.
That's true.
If you go to comichouse.com,
we're totally professional. We are.
Yeah, we are totally professional. We're totally professional. Oh, I went too far. There's a huge selection of titles on their database, and if you self-publish and you've got loads of hard copies of your books, we've all got boxes of books.
I've got some really bad ones. I don't dare put on there because people will think less of me. Not like that's difficult, but you know.
Or they'll think more, Tony. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your work has a ripple effect throughout the cosmos.
Pissing in a pool.
So hopefully we'll see Tony's hidden secret comics one day. But yes, you could get your comics on there. If you self-publish, you can list your book on comichouse.com for free. Start. It's just another avenue to sell your books. They've also got an app which has loads of books, including this week's guests. So you can go on, you can go onto the app and start reading these awesome books we're about to talk about.
There's loads of Vargas Gold on there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Vargas Gold.
That's what I call it.
Oh, that sounds good. But basically, the app is like Netflix for comics. Subscription service for only £3 a month, which is actually less than one issue of a mainstream comic.
I hope one day to actually get some new comics. They've been out a while. I haven't received mine.
it's madness. Absolute madness. And it's madness if you're not on Comic House. So, because the app is brilliant. There's the library is growing all the time. What sort of stuff have they got there on at the moment, Dan?
We've got Spare Keys for Strange Doors, Ice Gift Volume 1, Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies Volume 1, Surrealsville Isolated. We've got But I'm a Cat Person Volume 8. I'm not sure if that's actually on. Right. It is on the app, so I presume the rest of it is on there. Issues.
What?
There's a lot in there.
About being a cat person.
I think all my comics could probably be about that.
They started in 2012, so they've been going a while.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. How is that any different than like, you know, comics about other animals, other pets?
Well, I wouldn't want to read them either.
Well, there's a topic for future episodes. Lovely. I'm always trying to think of new topics for episodes.
Me and my chinchilla. That's episode 257.
Now it's pet comics. So if you have a comic about your pet,
please forward it to me.
Or the popular 80s drama Alf Wiedersehen Pet, then let us know.
How about the popular 80s drama Cat's Eyes?
Oh, yeah.
Like Simon's Cat, the comic.
That is a juggernaut of a comic, that one. But as long as it's not about the musical Cats.
There's money in them now hills. Make a book about your pet.
Yep.
The only one I approve of is Cats the Bumhole Special that I did a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah. That gives a bit more to the genre though, doesn't it? So as you can see, there's loads of stuff. Did I cut you off before you finished the list, Dan?
No.
Oh, no. Good.
I'd have to be talking all night if I listed all the comics.
Exactly, the library is growing all the time. So go forth, check out comichouse.com. There's a 14-day free trial. There is a code at the moment which is live, which is Stay Safe, and you get another month of subscription. You get a month free. So we advise you to go and take advantage of that, because within those 14 days or that month, you're going to read so much awesome stuff by independent comic creators. And that's what we need. Because certainly week on week, the bigger companies aren't releasing them. But that's another topic entirely.
I feel like my life's on pause.
I thought this week was going to be the week that everything started to kick in a bit more.
That's what they said, didn't they?
It was actually, I know I talk about, you know, I do a thing every week on Twitter. I pick out covers from the Comixology browse. Not always stuff that I buy, of course. But, you know, but it's a joy looking through all the books that come through. This week was actually one of the shortest weeks in terms
of
releases.
Keep meaning to join in with you. And last few weeks I've looked and nothing's been inspiring me. I haven't managed to find four that I really dug. Do you know what I mean? So it's been hard work.
I mean, there was one week, I think it might have been this week, where the four I picked were the only four. Sometimes I like to, you know, save a JPEG of lots of different selections and then look at those selections in a folder and then think, oh no, that's clearly the best one, or you know, that one's not as good as I thought, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I pick them as I go along and then sometimes I end up with like six or seven or something. And then, that's what I do.
But it's also a fun game to play every week.
There's these weird romance ones that seem to take up half the page when I do. You know what they're about?
It's a lot of manga romance. Yeah.
They all seem to have like a very similar cover, and they all seem to come out at once. And there's loads of them.
It's sort of like a brand, isn't it? Sort of like a Mills and Booney kind of. Have you know? Are you talking about like it's got a pink band at the top?
That's it. Have you read any of them?
No. But I'm not going to say anything about them because I haven't read any of them.
No, so I just wonder what they're about. I don't know what they're about.
Yeah, I'm sure it's romance comics.
I presume he's like, yeah, teen romance, but yeah. They
That's
must.
Up my street. I love a bit of teen romance.
They
know.
Do great guns. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. It's weird that we used to have that kind of culture in this country, and then it's kind of gone.
Yeah,
romance comics.
Yeah,
it is.
I blame Savile. Yeah.
Oh my God! Why did you bring that name into the conversation? Jeez. But I will say romance comics, and we'll state it now, is a topic and a genre that we've wanted to talk about for a while, but it's been so difficult. It's been the most difficult one that we've...
It's the one to unjoin from erotic comics, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
there's
we're
a meeting
start.
In the middle, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, there's a grand history of romance comics in the 50s and 60s. You know, you had the horror genre, which was huge and obviously had its controversies, but romance was selling bigger than... A lot of
John Romita, all these sort of people were doing great romance books.
Yeah. So, so help us out, folks.
I might write a romance book.
Think about that.
It's tricky, yeah. I wouldn't want to give that genre a go.
Yeah, do you know what, Tony? I think, I mean, all jokes aside, you should genuinely try it.
I've got a romantic heart, you know me.
But well, yeah, it's the rest of you I'm worried about. but in a, because obviously people will probably think, oh, Tony's gonna write this. This would be, I mean, if they read Atomic Hercules, ooh, all bets are off. But I think it would be an interesting challenge to try and write something that is straight down the line and serious.
Well, I've written kids' comics, and I,
yeah, no, there's a bit of a romance thread in the Hall Chronicles,
yeah, there is.
And
that's a romantic comic,
that's heart touching,
And it, I mean, it goes down that tragic route. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I guess you've already
all romance is tragic.
God, what a thing to say! All romance is beautiful, Tony.
Gustavo, you ever tried writing a romance novel, comic?
Not really. I mean, when you write stories, you have a bit of everything, right? But not one that is like romantic. Even if I try, I think it could be a bit twisted. I don't know, somebody would die or something like that.
Well, that's all
anyway,
right.
It still,
the
still
man
is
will
romance.
Die at the end, it can be like a heartbreaking romance, can't it? That's all right. Mm. That's all right.
Yeah. I think it's very healthy sometimes to. For example, me, I usually don't do romance. Okay, let's try romance. And let's
in comics,
just,
you mean? Yeah. But we know in real life, my friend.
What a romantic
No, that could be a real mess. No. Let's leave everything in fiction. Yeah. Fiction is safe.
Not always. But certainly. I think the genre is... I want to say it's easy enough for us to sort of say we're having trouble finding more of these books or finding enough so we can talk about it, because we're fairly, it's something that we've discussed, you know, hosting this, sort of saying, I don't know this genre as much.
Yeah, there it is out there. I've seen a bit here and there.
Mm.
I don't know. Sort of LGBT romance books at the moment I'm seeing. Yeah. There's quite a few of them on there, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of them I find you get a lot of webcomic sort of romance books as well that they've always got quite a bit of comedy in them. It's almost romantic comedies. I see a lot of that going through rather than straight up serious. You know, we're not talking a Romeo and Juliet kind of, you know, story here. There's always
all right. Well, let me pose it for you guys. What's your famous in any medium? What's your famous romance story?
Oh,
my favorite one,
Dutch and Dylan from Predator. Oh, that is such a good question, because I do.
There must be one. Come on, Notting Hill. You're a Notting Hill boy, aren't you?
Did you know what? I like Notting Hill. That's.
I might find it quite funny. It's all right.
Yeah,
it's all right.
It is really good. Do you know what? Sometimes you want cheese on your toast, don't you? And it's just the
that
right
Welsh geezer, isn't it? I forget his name. Reece Evans. He's good, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good question. Dan, you're a romantic soul. What's your favourite romantic story?
It'd probably be Paul Kersey in Death Wish 3.
Oh, God.
That's funny, because I was going to say Green Inferno is mine.
No, there's a couple. I'm trying to think. There's a couple, like, I can recall. But I can't remember that, like, real kind of good romance stories, usually ones that you kind of like draw me more with the tragic element.
Yeah. I'm gonna think of about 10 as soon as we stop recording.
I'm gonna say two straight off the bat. One, Love and Rockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's huge tranches of that are about remote romance.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Minimum Wage. Minimum Wage is about a search for love.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, if we're talking about romantic angles in comics,
yeah, but I mean, they're full on.
The love triangle between Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Wolverine it's a classic. And to be honest, I'm on Scott Summers' side all day with that one when it comes to that one. But
yeah, I'm not. To be fair, I always thought the way. So unfortunately, people watch it in the movies and they think, oh, he stands a chance, Wolverine. But in the comics, he was this runty, horrible guy who didn't stand a chance.
Sort of sticking his oar in.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
There was, they're going to expose my nerd heart here, but in back in the New Warriors, there was the character Marvel Boy, was it?
Yeah.
And he was, him and Firestar were kind of had a relationship, and he gets put in prison because he basically uses his powers on his abusive dad, and they get kind of locked up, and there's like the romance between them two. At the time, I was like, I was really quite invested in that.
Yeah, yeah, I was invested in the old Scarlet Witch Vision storyline.
Oh yeah, the Scarlet Witch. Yeah, that's
a
classic,
really lovely
one,
story.
Yeah, I think sometimes the problem that a lot of these relationships or romances, Rogue and Gambit, there's another one.
I actually kind of prefer Rogue and Magneto. You know.
Ooh, yeah, I can see that.
I know
too.
It's a terrible thing to say.
I kind of
prefer. I find Gambit slightly fucking annoying. And I prefer the Magneto, and he was sort of he had a thing with her, didn't he, for a while?
When it was all the Savage Land.
Yeah. And it's something that they did very, very well in the Age of Apocalypse, because they made those two a genuine. They were the main couple, didn't they?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked very, very well. Oh God, okay. we're talking about love so much. See,
What's your favorite couple in comics, Gustavo?
I have no idea. The thing is, I don't follow that many, I don't know, Marvel or DC comics. I never grew into them because I didn't get used to them. X-Men, I met them with the movies.
Yeah.
There were no X-Men comics in Peru. So it was, unless you had some friends in USA that could bring you some stuff or something like that. Definitely Mary Jane and Peter Parker.
How did you get into comics then, Gustavo? If you didn't have Marvel and DC in Peru,
you had some, but you have to dig up to go to two small kiosks on the corner. You wouldn't have any proper comic shop or anything like that.
Were you in Lima? Is it Lima you're from? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's in the coast of Peru. That's the main capital.
Yeah.
And basically, there were always comics, but just single floppies of, especially more like, I don't know, like, what are the names? I'm trying to translate the names because, like, for example, Nancy or Blondie, these old comics, American comics.
Archie? Were there things like that? Did you get Archie?
Archie sometimes, but the thing is, you couldn't follow not one of them. You could buy just
the Phantom. Singles. Is the Phantom popular?
A bit, not so much. Okay. I could find Spider-Man, but I was absolutely used to never to just have single issues because you could never find the next issue. Because
you know, it's a bit like that here as well, man. Well, you could never guarantee you'd find the next issue sometimes because you're like, we were a bit like you. It was just sort of newsstand or, you know, news agents that we had. Yeah, similar. Yeah.
But I never could follow anything. I had like the number 147 and then 202 and 305. And that was it. I was very used to finish reading one Marvel or DC comics with a cliffhanger.
How did you get bitten by the comic bug then? You know, how did you sort of like join the collective, shall we say?
I still was pretty fascinated by it. I couldn't stop it. And the thing is, maybe I could study them a bit more. I could just keep on rereading them. And there's some Argentinian comics. When I was a teenager, I got a bit more into them, and there were some small magazine stores that could sell secondhand magazines and books, and you have to dig up and go by, I don't know, there were magazines, all kind of magazines, and sometimes you could find some especially Argentinian comics, and you could follow, and usually they would be small anthologies, so you could start a story and finish a story with 10-12 pages stories or whatever you had, but the medium was basically very attractive. And also my dad knew I was really into comics, so, and he was working in advertising. So he had some friends that were into comics, and sometimes they would go to USA or had some friends. So every opportunity, he would they would lend him the comics so I could read it, or sometimes he would photocopy them for me. First time I read Killing Joke was in Portuguese in a photocopy.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was like... I think you're younger than most of you are younger than me. But for example, when I was a kid, it was before the CD when you had only the audio cassettes.
Yes.
Because right now I tell you the name of a group and that's it. That's done. You will hear it the next second. You just go click. Before I would tell you a name, I would tell you something. And I have a friend of a friend that maybe has that. It was a bit like that. You were really, really trying to find your golden egg, and eventually, yes, I have that. Yeah. It was really, really hard to find a lot of things. For example, Lord of the Rings. When I was in university, I knew I had three friends, and they were the only ones that knew what Lord of the Rings was, and they only had the first book. There was a friend that was going to go to Colombia in like next year and was going to bring the Two Towers. So it was after the movie, you could find it absolutely everywhere. But before that, it was very, very hard.
Okay.
But you were really curious about it. So you could find bits, different bits of different things all the time. So that's why my taste is very eclectic. And sometimes I know things about some comic and it's obvious I should know the next thing, and I'm completely lost because I have a lot of gaps.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you've got a hell of a lot of cyberpunk influence in your work. So where did that come from?
I'm not very much into... I've never read that many cyberpunk science fiction comics. Not that many. I was more... a bit, but at least not cyberpunk. I was more into, especially I discovered, I don't know if you know William Gibson's books.
Big fan.
That's the one that really brought me the cyberpunk. And I was already a big lover of Blade Runner that had this.
That's kind of one of the books that kind of started the, what's called the cyberpunk kind of movement and aesthetic. So it's interesting because that kind of flows throughout your work. It's kind of, there's a mash of like, this kind of organics and the cybernetic stuff. So,
and not in a manga way either. Your work it doesn't feel a manga, which is what most people think of when they think of cyberpunk, don't they? There's no manga to it, really. It's more European.
Because a lot of authors I've read were Argentinians, or Argentinians working in France, but still Argentinians. And I never got to read that many manga, actually. Not really. So my influence is a bit more mixed European, mixed American, a lot of South American actually, and Spanish too. So that came from that part. The same, for example, Neuromancer. I knew about the book because a friend of a friend told me about it. So the next time a friend would travel to Argentina, he bought me Neuromancer. So I couldn't even find it in Peru. That was in the middle of the end of the 90s.
Wow. Okay.
Because all three books have got like a kind of the protagonists or antagonists are kind of co-opting creatures and using them, like adapting them cybernetically for their kind of own ends, which is kind of like a take I haven't seen before, and I really enjoyed it.
I think I don't know exactly how I come up with that. Basically, I pick anything, movies or stories or whatever, and I just mix whatever I need that I feel that feels okay. I think there's some things that there's some Akira influence for sure. There's some Eon Flux. They have a lot of biopunk there, actually. You have organisms and things, and things are a bit more organic.
Yeah.
And there's also, I can see that influence in some of your pages where there's a definite sort of close up on a face, you know, like a nose and the lips. Because I know, like, Aeon Flux used to do a lot of, like, it would close up on the eye, wouldn't it? Like the eyelashes and certain, it, like, certain crops of a face rather than seeing the whole thing.
Yeah. Sometimes I get an idea and it's, how can I make it this? Because sometimes I just want to, I don't know, go from panel to panel, but sometimes I really want to make it feel really weird, but at the same time to make it work on the world I'm building. And so I try things. Many times I write and little by little things keep on changing. For example, in Manu, you have this, this in the beginning, the playful jaguar that licks Sonia's face. It's a bit of a joke. That was a bit, the whole scene in the beginning was a bit more uncomfortable and scary. It was going to be just cyberpunk monkeys. Eventually that changed about the jaguar, but she getting scared. But because I wanted to have an impact later of the jaguar, I said, okay, he can't be look scary. Maybe I should try to make it funny. So you just start mixing things. It's building up. In some moment, things make sense. But I think basically I'm not afraid of combining things that don't make sense until they make sense.
Okay. That makes sense.
It's an experiment on the page is what you're saying. You actually experiment while you're drawing it or?
No. That was before. The thing is, usually when I come up with a story, first, many times I have no idea what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I just start thinking about having something, and eventually, in some moment, it hits you because your brain is all the time trying to find something, even if you're not conscious about it.
Yeah.
After you get some elements, so sometimes you know, okay, I want to mix this with this. I don't know exactly how, but I think I want to mix them, and little by little, you create characters, and the characters in some moment, I just keep them rolling in my head all the time. And in some moment, they just kind of start speaking between each other.
Yeah.
And they have a bit of a personality. I think, okay, what can I do with you? You should die. You shouldn't die. You should, I don't know, lose an arm. I just start mixing things. And but most of the story, most of the main plot happens in my head. When I really want to, okay, I really need to stand and put in paper and really explain what happens through panel to panel, through scene to scene, then I go to paper. But most of the story, usually I already know what's going to happen before I've written it.
So how do you write for yourself then? Because obviously with your artwork, you're giving yourself room to play. There's wonderful action sequences that sometimes there's no words on the panel, you're just seeing these wonderful sort of like action sequences play out. But these are heavy character pieces, and there's lots of dialogue, and there's lots going on for people to sort of like digest. How do you sort of write for yourself?
I think in the beginning, like I told you, I start working everything on my head. I just think about the characters, what's happening, what should happen, what should not happen. When I go to paper, I think before I start putting the actual plot and expanding that on paper, I start doing a lot of research, but a lot. And I start reading a lot. I see news, things, maybe something I don't know, some language, whatever. And then I start designing the characters.
Right.
Okay.
You
take some time. You almost have like thinking time before you.
Yes.
A lot of people sit down and write a script, but I think sometimes you need to come up with an idea and then. There's two elements. I always think this is avoid the obvious and be original, and they're not always the same thing. And I think to do that, you need to take time on it. Sometimes I think
basically most of any good work, even if it comes easy or not, because you're used to it, comes with a lot of effort. You shouldn't get. Sometimes if you're lucky, you will have your first idea and it's going to work really well, but shouldn't get attached to your first idea. You should just scratch it and say it doesn't work. For example, for Lima, I knew I wanted to use these vultures, and I knew I wanted to do something with these teenager kids, this gang street.
Yeah.
That was the only elements. I want to do something with that. I don't know exactly what, but I want to do something with them. And I came up with a story. I worked, I don't know, for months, I think. I even made the basic thumbnails. And when I was almost ready to go to the next step of a more detailed thumbnailing and start plotting more on paper, I realized that the story wasn't really worth telling. So I was like, no, and I completely scratched it. And I completely changed it, and I did. That's how I came with Lima. But you have to really scratch it.
If you don't feel it,
I mean, it's not fun. Yeah, I have to start again. But you have to be really, really passionate about your story and really happy with it and really sure, even if you're not sure. But at least you have faith that it's going to work.
And it is one of the benefits of the small press is we're not working to a huge deadline, are we? We're not, in general terms, they don't expect it out next week. We can change it if we like. We can go and play with it again, you know.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. But in this case, I tried to put a deadline. I had that year, I had the Thought Bubble deadline.
Okay.
So at least I knew. Because if not, maybe, I don't know, you can finish it whenever, and 3 years happen. So
you're working it to your own way. Do you know what I mean? It's not like someone's telling you. It's like you're kind of setting a goal for yourself, which I think is a good thing, you know.
Yeah. No. You have to. And usually I don't. For example, when I write the story in my head, I don't care if I'm going to. If it's, I don't worry if it's going to be too hard. I don't know how it's going to be done. I don't know how I'm going to pull that off. I don't care about that, because that's kind of the writer part.
Yeah.
When it comes to the artist, it's like, oh, come on. but that's okay.
Yeah. There's the two sides of your brain where one of them's writing, you know, 4,000 people attack a castle, and then you come to draw it and you hate yourself just for a short time.
That's what comics is about, basically.
You don't want to kind of inhibit yourself by saying, right, I'm not going to do that because that's a lot of work to draw. But also, you want to kind of tell the story you want to tell. And if, I think it's a tricky one to kind of weigh up.
Right-rised.
The thing is, for me, I think for any comics, the main thing that really matters is the story.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter if you're, I don't know, how simple or how complex your art is. It has to fill the way of the story. If it doesn't fit, you have to change it. Because it's a comic. You're telling a story. It doesn't matter how much time you invest on doing something, because you know it's going to be like 1, 2, 3 seconds. You're going to see each panel, and it's, I don't know how many seconds per page, but... you have to be really faithful to the story, and that's why you get rid of characters, things, situations, and that's how you can make it the best out of it. And the same when you do the coloring or the lettering or even the art itself, it has to go together to tell the story. You have to respect that and to understand that. For me, that's very, very important, because sometimes you can see in movies, you see it sometimes, it's like, oh, come on, edit a bit more. It could have more impact.
Yeah.
We don't need that. I mean, it's a lovely conversation sometimes, but that doesn't flow with the rhythm of the whole story. And sometimes you have to get rid of scenes. I don't know if you remember in Lima, there's a... The kids go to, after they have one of the kids, and it's this cyborg guy with the priest.
Okay.
Has the kid, and he's dripping with blood, the girl, and all that. They go to get the kids. They go with two other guys, and I already had thumbnailed a whole battle scene between them, and it's going to be really gory and spectacular. But I realized I think it's going to have more impact if you only see the aftermath of that, which is basically a pool of blood. It's very gory, but I mean. It could be a very cool fight scene, but I think it's going to be even more, it's going to have more impact if you start with just the bloody face of the girl, and little by little you see everything happened. And maybe it's never going to be better. What I did was never going to be better to what happens in your head when you see, okay, I don't know how did this happen, but something really happened.
Yeah, the reader joins the dots, don't they? I mean, I think sometimes, especially with artists who write their own stuff, there is a temptation to just just do stuff. Oh, you know, I just want to draw this. So you've got, like, you know, pages and pages of stuff that, like you say, isn't important to the story. And things are so much, I think some of the best tales, especially sort of like artists, writers, etc., they know when to pare that back. They know, like, when to, like you say, cut out. And I know exactly the scene you're talking about, because there's, you know, four kids running towards the screen, as it were.
Exactly.
And the next time you see them, one of them's hanging upside down and they look like they're pretty fucked up. And that's immediately like, oh, I know exactly what's happened. Things didn't go down the way it was supposed to go, and now horrible things are about to happen. You know, it had much more effect because of that. And I think that's something that some artists would benefit to do more with their work, to learn that. And this is a term that Tony uses all the time: kill your darlings. You know, you know, having these moments of, I love that scene, but, you know, if I cut it out, it actually works better. I mean, how many times have we all probably written a script which is a 48-page book, and you need to cut it down to a 40-page book, for instance?
Yeah.
And you hate the idea of cutting out those 8 pages because it feels like every word and syllable is so important. But the moment you're forced to think logically, cut things together, make things more impactful, when you see those 40 pages, it's so much tighter as a story, and you get so much more sort of, I don't know, pride in, like, oh.
I mean, it can be on the micro level as well. There can be a line of dialogue you think is, fucking hell, that's Shakespearean.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't work in the scene. So you've got to cut it, haven't you?
And you can always park it to the side and use it later. You can use these things.
That's why we keep notebooks, isn't it?
No, you never know if you're going to come back to use that. But that goes completely the other way. Because I'm doing a very, I don't know, it's an action adventure thriller. If I'm, like, for example, you were talking about romance, if you're trying to maybe make something with a mellow rhythm, you shouldn't do what I did there, because you're taking a lot of the building up of the relationship of the characters just for trying to make it, I don't know, faster. And in this case, you don't need to go faster.
I mean
you have to understand your creature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a similar sort of, we have the action scene, the kung fu scene, or just say, you know, if it's a romantic book or any sort of book, a love scene has the same sort of thing. You don't need to, sometimes you just need to see the aftermath of the love scene to know what's happened. You do though, don't you? I mean, how many comics have been read where all of a sudden two people are there, the next panel you see them and they're lying next to each other smoking cigarettes?
We don't always need the close up brown eye. Let's face it. Tony,
stop putting it in everything.
it's an interesting one.
It's very important, because you have to start making why questions all the time. Why did you make this thing? Why this character? Why is he wearing those clothes? Why that color? And you have to come with answers for that. And sometimes you can pull it off. You know what? I don't know why, but I really want to put this thing. Yeah. And you just, I don't know, you just play around it.
I know you've drawn for other people, Gustavo. Have you ever written for other people?
No, not yet. That would be quite a challenge, because usually I never get to a proper script. I more like plan. I make scenes and I divide it in pages, but while thumbnailing in a way, so I never have a proper script with the dialogue and everything based up and the number of panels or anything like that. I that would be challenging. That would be interesting to do and see if I can pull it off.
Well, I mean, we've read your writing, so we know that the writing chops are there. But certainly when you come to research, I mean, you're very thought out with the stories you have. And one thing I'm interested in is they're very cultural stories as well. Obviously, you're making comics that, obviously, they're available worldwide, etc. But, you know, you're an ever-growing name on the UK indie scene. And you're putting out Peruvian cyberpunk, which, I don't know about you, I don't see much on the UK independent comic book
scene.
No,
it's very unique.
Take the cyberpunk out of it for the moment. It's also fascinating, and I think why it resonates with a lot of people is because you're also introducing a culture and the way things are to a lot of readers. There's a lot of people who know essentially nothing about Peruvian culture and stuff. Is that something very important to you when you were creating this as well as to do a badass crime story or something like that, but you also want to stay true to the culture?
Yes, that's very, very important. I was very happily surprised how people approached my comics, and they were like, especially, I think it's a bit, it's even stronger in independent comic universe, because it's like, oh, I know nothing about Peru. Give it to me. It's not like, oh, I don't know it. I don't know. I only buy things I know. No, the people are very, very curious. If I don't know it and it looks interesting, okay, let's try that out. But yes, for me, it's very important, because one is a thing. I'm building a world there, and I have to make it believable. I have to make it plausible to feel real, according to my rules. And one of those things is Peru. So it has to feel like Peru, because even if you take out all the cyberpunk tech stuff, it's how people behave, how they manage, and the surroundings is very Peruvian. I try to be as faithful as I can, and it's also showing another culture. I think I got even more interest about Peruvian culture when I left Peru than when I was there.
What sort of little touches are you adding, or what things are you adding that we might be missing but are part of your culture? Is there anything there you can verbalize about that, dude?
There's still a lot of things, but we have the thing is, the more I will build up more characters and more base, you can feel a bit more like how Peru works. But in general, it's very hectic, it's very chaotic, like a comic. Food is very important, so you see food here and there. And how people interact between each other is very, we're very touchy, we get close really fast, and we're very intense. I hate you or I love you. I'm not in the middle ground like, yeah, I kind of like you. No. Or I hate you or I love you.
It's kind of the South American equivalent of Twitter. No, I get you, man. I get that through your work. Yeah. I get the immediateness of the emotions in your work. Yeah, the characters are very sort of they reply quickly, and they're interactive that way. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of
it's a bit more. There's a bit more of drama and a bit more of intensity, even how people stand next to each other. We get a bit closer.
In the comments, there seems to be a kind of a disposability to things, and including people. Like, if someone gets killed, it's like, on we go. There's not really kind of a look back. A lot of people just seem to, that people die, and the lifestyle and culture just seems to be just keep pushing forward and don't look back. Everything seems a bit disposable.
I mean, that's obviously if something in real world would happen, something like that would be a bit even more tragic. But at the same time, we kind of rely a bit on let it flow, keep on.
Excuse me for saying this, Gustavo. I have never been to Peru, so I don't have a clue. Is it a violent country? Is there, you know, how is it different to here? Is there, I don't know. Is there crime? Is there?
I'm completely ignorant. I don't know.
It used to be more violent. Right now, it's racing, but it's not a dangerous country. For example, if any of you would want to go when the world goes back to normal, it's completely fine. You're going to be absolutely fine. It's not like be careful, don't go that place. It's very, no. You could go. It's their war, so a lot of things don't work. People don't speak English, and it's a bit more like people don't care sometimes that things don't work, and that's okay. That's all right.
Okay. So
there's a lot of links with the Incan culture as well, like that, you know, like the Machu Picchu and stuff like that. Obviously, there's the tourist attractions that bring a lot of people in, isn't there?
Yeah, actually, tourism is one of is I don't know. We Peru makes a lot of money with tourism.
Yeah,
especially Cusco and the mountains and the jungle.
Yeah, and I've got some friends who've been there, and they speak very highly of it. I just didn't know what the urban stuff was like, which I know is stuff in an area you work in. You know.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, because Machu Picchu is more, I think it's one of the most famous things we have. Yeah. People think that it's basically small. I don't know, small villages.
Yeah,
and stuff like that. But you have different areas, and it's very. For example, Lima is it's something obviously third world thing, but it's something like London. We have like 10 million people living there.
Wow,
it's huge. Yeah. It's very, very big, but it's very centralized, so it works very differently. And also the other thing I usually try to pull off on my comics is, for example, for me, right, in absolutely any conversation, any situation here, I've learned English, but there's things I don't get. There's because of slang or I don't know if it's a culture thing. Or sometimes I just don't get the pronunciation of something.
What's that? Accents play a big role.
For example, if let's say I couldn't know nothing about politics, I don't know, I would be completely away from that. You say the word Brexit, and unless I don't know the meaning, I won't understand anything about what you're saying. And it's not even an English word; it's a mix of things.
And it's very
long to explain. It's not going to. You're not going to tell me Brexit is. I don't know. It's not a sentence. You have to speak to me 5-10 minutes for me to understand what this means.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And many times you use things like that. Yeah. Yeah. Like Brexit. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Brexit's slang, isn't it? Brexit is. I know it's a word in the dictionary now, but it started off as a slang word, didn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You can even verbalize it right now. I mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand maybe your trepidation about like putting in things like that. But I will state that you have a brilliant. Your dialogue is brilliant, and some of the one-liners are just. I think one of my favourites, which I just pulled up now, is "Okay, fucker, I scratch yours and you scratch mine. Where the fuck does it itch?" That's a line and a half.
Yeah.
So good.
Did you watch English language movies growing up, or were they all translated? You know,
they were all translated.
Right.
I mean, on TV, on that's another thing, and on film there was always with subtitles.
Yeah,
a little by little, you could get a bit more interested in understanding English for reading. I don't know, any Marvel comics that were a bit more modern in some moment. There were never translations, so I was trying to learn a bit more of English, basically. Those kind of things. And for example, that's what I was talking about, that you have to put more and more work and never, I don't know, kill your darlings, like you were saying, and never get settled on. That's good enough. It shouldn't be good enough. You should be really sure, even if you're making a big mistake, you should be really sure that you think that's the best you could do. Usually, for example, when I start my dialogues, they are really, really bad. They are so basic. It's like, hi, are you all right? Yes, I'm all right. It's very good that we're all right. Yes, that's good. Yes, that's good. It's disgusting, but I put it because I need to pace up and they're going to say that, but it's really horrible how I put it in the beginning. And little by little, I go once again, I rewrite. I don't know how many times I rewrite, like 7, 8, 10 times until it makes sense. And I start taking out. No, there can be a better way. That's how I come up with that kind of thing.
Are you sometimes like rewriting in the lettering stage? You know, are you finding like things will move better, or suddenly an amazing line comes to your head, and that can go in. So you're almost working in layers. You've got like the basic clay, and then all of a sudden, as the book goes on, you're adding more to it until the final product.
Doesn't happen. I mean, I always change small bits. Never. It's not that often that I change a whole conversation or a whole thing, but how you could say that, right? Because because she could say, for example, what you read, I don't know, what can I do for you, fucker? Which is going to give the same information, but it gives you a bit more about the character. So little by little, the more you think about your characters have their own voice. And in some moment, she wouldn't say it like that. She would say it like this other way, or let's try this other thing. So it's basically trying to invest more time in making your characters have their own voice.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to live with them, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I'm right in thinking that are you drawing for another writer in quarantine? Is that right? Or have you, you haven't written it yourself? Is that right?
Yes. No, everything is Jordan's.
Jordan's, right. So how are you finding that, drawing someone else's script? Is that a different ball game for you? Or?
Yes, actually, it tends to be easier. In a way, because you're not doing the writing. But I couldn't... The thing is, I enjoy it as much as doing my stuff, I think. Drawing for other people. It's a lot of fun, because and you can try things. Because you tell me a story, but now I'm going to tell it in my voice. Mm. And I come up with ideas, and I will tell you, you know what if you go to the left instead of the right? Could be maybe a bit more interesting. You try to put your extra instead of just... I will never try to do a transcription of exactly what you told me. I will try to put something else if that's in favor of the story. If it's not, I won't do it, because exactly we're all working towards making the story the best it can be. Mm. It's not for you to shine. It's basically for the story to shine.
Yeah, it's always a discussion, isn't it? You know, it's always a discussion between the creators, I think.
I think you can get a lot more when you have this conversation between writer, artist, colorist, and all that. The more you have a conversation, I think you can pull a better work in the end.
That's collaboration. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I say, comics, like they can be great in the sum of their parts. Yeah. When you get a good artist and a good writer working together, they can produce something absolutely fantastic. Mm.
And I don't know. And comics are even if it's big companies, many times many good comics are the products of people, because that writer was having that extra beer with this artist, and in the end they hit. Yeah. Why don't we try that thing? And because you can see a lot of people working together through different projects, because they really like how they handle things together.
Mm. Oh yeah, totally. So, we've seen there's a lot of like duos, aren't they? You see like Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, for instance. You know, the amount of books that they've done, and it's just a relationship that works. And like by the time they get to their third story, there's a shorthand. You don't need to. Oh, I don't need to write a full script for this bit because he'll know what he's doing. He or she will know what they're doing. You know, it's beautiful if you can find that synergy with someone. I think. Mm. Have you had many since your books like exploded onto the scene? You must have had a few requests. You know, you must have had a few emails sort of saying, "Oh, I've got this cyberpunk type story. You'd be perfect for." Have you had many sort of requests for your artwork?
Books. You mean like comics?
Yeah.
Comic book. Yeah. No, not a lot, but definitely some. I'm actually working even on at least a couple of projects now. But the funny thing is, I think I've never been approached to make a cyberpunk book, which is, I prefer it. But I was expecting that maybe somebody would try to tell me to make a, I don't know, create some cyberpunk story. I think the most cyberpunk I did, that was kind of, it was a bit cyberpunky, a bit apocalyptic. The one, Enter the Asylum with Accent UK. Enter the Asylum, I don't remember right now, but it was for the Asylum Steampunk Festival. And I made one story with Dave West, a 10-page story, which was a lot of fun. But I think that's the only cyberpunky thing. But still, it was very different. It was kind of a Mad Max story.
Okay.
What's your favorite genre? What sort of, you know, I mean, obviously you're dealing with cyberpunk, but you know that you might like romance or horror. You know, what's your favorite genre?
Yeah, I think I could say drama. I think because the thing is, that's another thing. I think because when I started making comics, one of the main things was also I was trying to learn. The more I could, the more I can build up to my brain, to how I work, what things I choose to do. And one of the things, especially from writers I've been hearing, is if you are a science fiction writer or if you make science fiction, you shouldn't be reading only science fiction.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
If you're, I don't know, making a romance book, don't only read romance, try to spread and my taste has also always been very eclectic, so I don't know, I think it's drama. I love science fiction, but most science fiction films, and especially films, are a bit too, I don't know, cheeky. No, they they don't work for me, because generally I tend to like something a bit more believable and not so much into the that's just fun.
Yeah, I find that with science fiction as well. Sometimes it's all show and no tell. Like there's these like films, they can look gorgeous. You create this world that, you know, I'd love to see the concept art for, but the story's really boring. You know?
Exactly. And it's a pity because you can make there's a lot of amazing story, but it happens a bit more in books than in films.
Mm, yeah, I think one of my top the times it's happened with me, I absolutely adore the look and feel of Tron Legacy. I think that is that yes, looks phenomenal, but the story's just really bit
filmed. Yeah, I like the look of it, but I've never made it through the film. I'll be honest.
That's the worst, because I prefer when somebody tries something and it goes really bad.
Yeah.
But not when somebody tries something that they think is going to work, because I've seen Tron Legacy, I think, but I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I don't even remember it, because it's a bit like you are so boring, so bland, that that I don't even remember our conversation.
Yeah.
Which is for me, is the worst, because at least, I don't know, try to make it your own and make your beautiful disaster mistake.
Yeah.
I will remember that mistake. It's going to be, I don't know, at least you try.
Yeah.
Well, I can look beyond kind of like wonky drawing or bad special effects or whatever, but if it's a really bad, boring story, I'm kind of out. I can't really stay there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can So like with Tron Legacy, like fantastic soundtrack, fantastic look, but the story is just absolutely bland. Just a non-entity, and there's been dozens of comics that you think, oh, this is amazing, and I started reading it and thought, there's just nothing here, nothing to this.
I think one of the big sort of a problem phrase, and this works for films and this works for graphic novels especially, is you're reading it and you think, this is a bit long. When is this going to end? If you're asking yourself, is it going to end anytime soon, perhaps you should just stop reading it, because it's obviously not, it's just not working for you.
No, because when you read something, and it's good, are there.
Yeah.
You're not in the real world, you're there, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you're spaced out and like, what time should I, you didn't get me.
Right? Yes, really, really bad sign to do that. How long is this book going for?
Has that ever happened to you, Tony?
What's that? What, reading a book or actually writing a book?
Like reading it, like especially, I think with graphic novels that works more, doesn't it?
Oh, Christ.
I mean, if it happens with an individual issue, never buy the comic again if that's your problem. But a graphic novel, have you ever thought, God, this is just going on forever?
Yeah, I read one recently, and it had two editors on it, one script editor and an editor, and that's my feedback for it was, this doesn't go anywhere for ages.
Yeah,
you know, it happens a lot. I mean, there's a lot of self-indulgent wanking going on in comics occasionally. You know what I mean? And you think, this is the only person this is interesting to is the writer.
Yeah, and that's just our stuff.
Yeah, and I do a lot of wanking. It's all self-indulgent, you know. But there's a lot of that going on, isn't there? That happens in everything. You see that in movies especially. You see it in novels all the bloody time. You know, in comics, not so bad, but it's still there, I think. Yeah.
Trouble is, you've got to have the editor in from the ground floor, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You can't sort of like come up with a finished product and say, oh, now can you be the editor on this? It's like, well, yeah. I've got no job here.
Yeah, I think you forgive it a little bit if it's a true story. I'm going to say that. I think because it's always in your head, this is actually what happened. You know?
Yeah.
An a biography of someone, or an autobiography even. You know, you kind of think, well, okay, yeah, this is a true story. I'm learning something about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, not so much in fiction, I think. Some things, I don't mind things being slow. Sometimes I think if they're well done and they're slow and there's a nice pace to it, the pacing is everything, isn't it?
Yeah. No, the problem is not if something is slow, if it makes sense that it
if it makes sense
slow.
To be slow, yeah. I'm looking at Essex County on the shelf here, and that's quite a slow book. Yeah, but it's still enthralling, you know, because it draws you in and it gets it right, you know.
We was, and it's aside from comics, we were talking about Takashi Kitano's Beat Takashi's films.
Yeah.
And they are very, very, very slow.
They are, yeah, ponderous.
Almost like if you're not used to that kind of style, you'd find it almost unbearable. Doesn't anything happen in this film? But
yeah, you have to make really an effort.
Yeah,
there's a beauty to them as well. I think, you know, you're right. You know what you're going in for. You're not watching the Fast and the Furious. You know, it's like that. You know,
but you can understand and hold that kind of like those pauses and the length. Whereas if you're kind of sitting there just rolling your eyes, thinking, "What the bloody hell's going on here?" There's no drama, no tension.
Some of my favourite scenes in the last year in cinema have been. I think I'm just getting bored of this sort of having to have action every 5 seconds in a movie.
Yeah.
One of my favourite scenes with that. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he keeps retaking that scene. I love that scene. You think, fucking, how many times? It's going wrong again. It's just.
Is that when he's in the trailer, just absolutely losing his?
He's in the salon. Yeah. He's got the moustache and he's in the salon and he's doing that acting and he's doing really well and every scene is so well acted and you're thinking, I'm getting this, you know. Or the bit where he sits there, where they're chatting to that young girl and Tarantino lets it go twice as long as any other director would be, but it's still interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what life is like. I kind of dig that, you know.
Yeah.
I've not seen
this Tarantino, the thing is he's a master of dialogue. That's also the other thing you have to know when to pull it off and when to make it stop.
I
was rewatching a bit of Pulp Fiction and I didn't notice this bit, but when Butch goes into the bar and he's just kind of taking his deal with Marcellus that my pride, I'm going to take the fall and take the money because I need it, and he talks to Vincent Vega. And he talks to John Travolta's character, and he, because he's had a bad day, he winds Butch up and annoys him, and the camera does a 180 as Butch turns round, and you realise that's his position's moved from taking the dive to doing a complete 180, and like now I'm going the other way because
I've never known. Any chance I get to watch that film, I'm going to take it. So
watch that sequence again. You can probably find it on YouTube. But like, he kind of winds him up, says, "Oh, you Palooko and Punchy, whatever you say, Punchy." And
it's just
enough that he had his pride under control, but that tipped it, and he's like, "I can't do it now." So it's a nice little touch.
Yeah,
yeah. There's those moments that can be really quiet, that can be the main moment in the movie when you look back at the tipping point. You know.
The thing is, it's like I don't know. You need silence for something to get really loud.
Yeah.
If everything is a bit loud, when you put the explosion, it's nothing. It's another loud, and that's why a lot of these really I don't know action movies that you have explosion every 2 minutes. In some moment, it just gets boring, and you don't care.
Yeah.
There's no drama. It's like, explosion number 27.
Yeah. Anymore, is there?
If the explosion means nothing, you have a problem.
That's one of the things in like stories and the script, when characters are confronting one another, it's not just to have a fight. There's usually like a clash of ideologies, or there's more to it. It's story relevant.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of the old comics used to have these massive long dialogue going as they fought one another. But if they're just fighting for whatever sake, there's no stakes involved, and it's completely uninteresting to the reader.
Yeah,
especially the cynical reader now as well.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, if Thor fought the Hulk, we'd wonder who would win, but we kind of know the winner in these books now, don't we?
But even then, there'd be a bit of setup, like, oh, Bruce Banner's lost and someone's jabbed him in the back.
I think the problem that some modern comics have, and this is something I see probably a lot more with the modern stuff as well, is sometimes an important moment won't get the light shone on it that it deserves. Like a character death, you know, you're with this character for a long time, one tiny panel in the corner of the comic and they're gone. And it's just, you're just kind of like, what just happened? And you don't even, you know, you don't even see what happened. You know, it's not that I'm looking for gore or anything, but you know, you're taken out of it and then you think, well, obviously they weren't that important, even though you've spent a lot of time on them.
Latest movies, that happens more and more, especially. I don't know if there's a YouTube channel called Every Frame a Painting. It's an editor that explains some things about movies, music. I don't know, it's 10, 15 minutes, small documentaries about something. And it's very interesting. Oh. And there's one episode in particular that he talks about that pacing when you're trying to build up and make drama for something. And he compares... Yeah. One sequence of, I think it's in Ant-Man.
Yeah. Okay.
Versus Luke not being able to control the Force on the Empire Strikes Back, and he puts just the timing, the whole time they use. And for example, I don't remember that well, but let's say they use one whole minute for the scene of Empire Strikes Back, and the other is maybe 10 seconds. So it doesn't give you time for you to feel and understand all the information you need to swallow for you to feel and see. That's exactly what's happening. So it's like, oh yeah, you're dead. Okay, bye. And you have the next thing. And it's like,
but I think the language of movies is moving over into comics now, because the thing is, like, the best example of this is The Walking Dead. As soon as we start getting a load of attention on someone and they're falling in love and they're going to have a baby, I just go, well, they're going to die soon, aren't they?
They're going to die, yeah.
You know, and it's the same as you feel in movies. You know that when the character gets a little monologue, gets their big scene, you think, right, well, they're going to die, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? It's like that now, isn't it? And it's moved over because we're paying so much attention to movies and TV. These, you know, like Mark Miller and, you know, Kirkman and Bendis and all this sort of thing. They're translating that language that they've learned in TED Talks about movies into comics.
It's a brilliant chance. Yeah, it is very obvious. I mean, it's a brilliant chance to subvert that.
That's
one of the things that comics can kind of step around. But I don't want to see what I see on a lot of the films in the comics. I'm not particularly interested in that. Try and use the medium for what it can do, as opposed to aping what another medium can do.
Exactly. What's that comic that Jason Aaron writes, Vince, that you like? Southern Bastards.
Yeah.
That plays with that conception, where the conception of the hero character in the first six issues, he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I like that when comics can do that, because comics can do that. They don't have to worry about an actor, you know, getting out of contract. So, you know, we don't have to bother with that shit.
But with that example, they even worked in the, you know, the way that the comic was marketed, the way it was framed, the fact that you're seeing nothing but this character, this badass character. Spoilers for Southern Bastards. You should read it anyway, because it goes on to be an amazing series.
It's amazing.
There's loads amazing. More to that series. And certainly the ramifications of that character passing away is the book, I think. But the first six issues, like you say, there was a focus on, look at this badass, you know, Clint Eastwood, you know, he's going to kick some ass. And the
he's
way
gonna make that baseball bat, and he's gonna.
And to be fair, he's a badass. He is an absolute badass, and it gives him his due. But then when it rips him away from you, you feel like you've lost something.
You also feel the cruelness of the situation. Yeah. You feel how desperate everyone is and how dangerous it is by that. You know, it builds it. Suddenly you're thinking, this is the real world. That's what it does to you. Not like a fucking movie where someone, you know, jumps off a car, over a building, back into the car again. Nobody gives a fuck anymore about that, you know.
And it led to the amazing reveal, you know, because then you had the build-up. There was more development of the bad guys and stuff. And then this guy's daughter comes into play. And when you see her, she goes, you know, I'm about to go home. I'm ruining, you know, the brilliant dialogue in the book. And you see, oh, she's an ex-Marine and she can kick ass, you know, and it leaves that issue. She's about to go back and you think, fucking, someone's in trouble now. And it becomes really super exciting. It, by using these different ways of telling a story, you take out another character and it just amps up the next character like 10 times.
Yeah.
Aaron's just an amazing writer.
Yeah, no, it's a good series. Yeah. I wish there was more of it. Yeah, it sort of disappeared a bit now, isn't it? Yeah.
Speaking of more comics, what's in the future for you, Gustavo? Because obviously Manu is the latest one. And at the end of that one, we're to be continued, or which is always a good thing to read in a book, in Puno?
Puno.
So I guess that one's in development. How's that coming along?
Yes, I'm still on the character design stage, which is meant, sometimes it's even longer than the actual comic production. Sometimes it's like going to a place and meeting a lot of people, and in the end you only tape like a conversation between three of them. Yeah. But you have to talk to everybody to understand where you are and what you're going to do. Yeah. A bit like that. So yeah, the thing is, I planned when I came with the idea of this whole story, which is going to be in total three issues, Altiplano. It was a book like a bit more than 100 pages, maybe 100, 110, something like that. And I was really, I really wanted to arrive to Last Thought Bubbles Festival with a new book. And I wasn't going to be able to bring more than 100 page book. So I said, what can I do? So I chop it in three parts.
Yeah.
So Manu is the first issue, is the first part. Uno is going to be the second part. And it's going to end with Altiplano, where the story ends.
And you obviously worked on Quarantine as well. So is that finished? Is it? Or
Yes. I think we're on the 24 last hours, something like that. But it's doing really, really well. That was only one panel. One panel, one page. Yeah, right, the game is a bit like each one of the artists, which are amazing, even some are really good friends.
Yeah.
Russell, Beats, and Clark Bean is doing amazing stuff right now. He's getting even better and better. And the thing is, it's each one is doing one page. So the comic is going to be like an experiment because each page, you know, is going to be completely different than the other one.
Yeah.
And right. how well it's going to flow the story. It's a very nice experiment. It's a very, very fun idea. I'm working on Puno right now. It should be, in some moment of this year, it's going to be done for sure. I'm working full time right now on a secret project that is going to be announced, I think in something like a week. It's a very cool project, but I cannot yet say anything. Yeah. I can say it's science fiction.
Is it for a big company, or is it self-published, or
it's something a bit different. Let's say I don't want to spill any beans, but it's very, very exciting, and the project is really amazing, and it's with a very experienced writer. So I'm really looking forward to what people is going to say about the news and what people is going to think of this book.
Well, do let us know.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We'd love to talk about that on the show.
I thought we were friends, Gustavo. But you know, if you can't tell us, that's fine.
Maybe you're fair.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I knew this was going to be a great conversation, but we had a deep dive into like narrative and stuff, and I love it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Yeah, nice.
And like, seriously, folks, if you haven't checked out Gustavo's books, please do so.
You haven't been listening to us because we've been saying it for years.
Yeah, we have been saying it for a long time. Where can people actually, if they want to, because the books themselves are lovely printed books as well. They're just great to have in your collection. But you also have them available digitally as well. Where can people go if they want to like look now while we're rambling on for the rest of the show?
They can go to Gustavo with WF Vargas.bigcartel.com. I have the comics, I have the sketchbook, and I have a Peruvian cyberpunk digital triple pack. So I put Manu, Lim, and Trujillo together in one bundle.
Nice. How can you not want that? I know a lot of our listeners have already got the books, but if you haven't, get them now. Get them now.
Before... Little Taste of the Exotic. Yeah. Bring it on.
You can also read them on the Comic House.
Yes.
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 Yes. The three of them are there too. Yeah. So
there's no excuse. Basically, you've got absolutely no excuse not to check out these books. Yeah, and just so you know, you're already well versed with Gustave's work when all of the amazing stuff that he's about to announce gets announced.
Yeah, there you go. You'll be up part of the cool crowd.
Yes, yes.
I've got a commission from you, so I'm just saving it till the big news comes out, and I'll be sticking it on eBay.
So, this is part of the long game, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah. Spot them as they're coming up, make loads of money later on. That's it.
Yeah. How are you with commissions? Are you open to commissions? Because obviously you're quite busy. You've got a lot on, but.
Sometimes I find time for commissions, but it's not officially open. So I may find some time from, I don't know, once, twice a month, something like that. Because I'm working on this project. I'm working on my book. There's the Scrollers magazine I'm working on too, with Russell.
Those degenerates. They're all degenerates. Yeah.
The disgraceful scroll lords who are destined to be a Mad Max gang.
So that's a very exciting project, and I also have a Kickstarter project that should be coming soon with Mad Robot Comics.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Nice.
So I'm full. Last year I was working on a small print shop. Right now I'm full freelancer.
Wow.
So it happened very fast. I've been very lucky. Very, very lucky.
Well, it's well deserved.
That's
dude.
To us. It's just well, so you know. That's
thank you. Thank you so much.
It's got nothing to do with us. You've done it despite us. No, it's well deserved, dude, because we love your work. So, yeah, keep it coming. And, you'll understand. Well, as soon as you read it, folks, you'll understand why we're just praising him so much. And now he's been on the show, he'll never be able to get rid of us. So,
of course.
Do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
I have a few.
Go for it, Tony.
Okay, so released on the 22nd of June, now up for pre-order, is The Horizon Cafe, written and drawn by Emanuela Maleri. I'm the editor on it. She is an absolutely brilliant, great new talent. I think there's a real strangeness to her work that is really entrancing. It's a metaphysical, drug-drenched, burlesque mystery. How's that? Existential hallucinations in a sort of really gorgeous, otherworldly style of artwork. There's a real poetry to it. It's a lovely, lovely graphic novel. Change your perceptions of reality and get revenge is what the back of it says. Discover the truth at the Horizon Cafe. I'm absolutely really proud to be editing this book. And
nice.
Emanuela is an Italian artist writer who there was a pledge level on one of the Little Heroes books that was Tony will edit your comic. And it was taken up by Harry Marcos at Marcosia, and he cashed his chips in. And I said, "You better not be giving me a shit book, Harry." And he gave me this, and I'm absolutely over the moon. It's lovely, and she's a real talent, man. Friend, or if you're on Facebook, friend her on Facebook. I'm not sure if she's anywhere else, but she certainly puts a load of artwork up. Really good stuff. A couple of other ones. Adrian Hashimi, if you listen to the Never Unending Thing podcast that went out yesterday, is a long-standing friend of mine. I've been drunk with him in many, many different countries and many different karaoke bars. And he's got a book called Tales from the Straits, which is about folk tales from Malaysia. And it's going live on Patreon tomorrow, or today as you listen to this, and have a look for it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Adrian.Hashimi is his Instagram handle, as the kids say, and there's some artwork on there. And he's a storyboard artist for, he's done a couple of movies with Robert Redford. He's done a couple of movies with Oscar Isaacs, a movie with Ben Affleck. He's quite the geezer, do you know what I mean? He really is.
Mm.
And he's sort of, there being no movie industry at the moment, he's taken the plunge in, and this project, which he's been working on for years as a side project, is going live. The Spark Bundle, the Spark, which is a book that the three of us hosts are in, is now on Kickstarter. It's got 30 days to go. We're at about 52-54%, I think, at the moment. So it's going all right, but we could really do with some backing. Mm. Have a look at that. There's the opportunity to buy all sorts of things on there. Really proud of our efforts on that one. And the other one is...
Comics for your kids in lockdown.
Exactly.
Yeah. Comics for kids in quarantine.
There you go. How's that? Yeah. Some of them aren't
There's
going back
slogan
to school
for you,
our friend and 200th episode event alumni Farhan Qureshi is got Digitopia 2 out, which is on Kickstarter. Second volume of his sort of cyberpunk cyber story, which is very good. First volume we talked about a year and a half ago, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. But he turned up at the 200th. If you turned up at the 200th, you're forever our friend.
Yeah.
Is that, that's how it works. That's how it works.
I think if you've ever been nice to us.
That's true. Yeah. You ever bought Vince an ice cream or a packet of Quavers? Mm. He's all right, isn't he?
Hey, some people have bought me crisps at a show.
I bought you Quavers. No, I left them on your table and you went, oh, Quavers.
And yeah, now we're married.
You can keep the cat when we divorce.
I bloody well will.
Anyone else got any?
Yes, Dan.
Yeah,
go for it.
Yeah, the drawer, sorry. I was not, as mentioned earlier, not quite with it this week. So I'll be taking the poll on. I'll do the poll tomorrow, Monday, when you listen to this, and we get a new draw started once we get the results of that.
Nice one, good stuff.
My big announcement this Saturday, June the 6th, at 6 p.m. GMT.
Yes, can't wait.
GMT, is that London time?
Yeah,
it's British summertime, mm-hmm. isn't it? Summertime, baby.
British summertime.
Yes. The 6th of the 6th at 6 p.m, you'll be able to get your hands on a copy of MI666, which is drawn by the brilliant Andy Bloor and written by some scroat called Vince.
Hey.
No, in all seriousness, this has been coming for a long time. Just wait till you see it, because we're both very proud of it.
Yeah, it looks great, man. We've had a chance to read it. It's great.
Yeah,
very good.
I've not read it because I want to buy it. I'm saving the pleasure of getting the physical version.
Yeah. We will have a print and digital available. If you listen to this before June the 6th, then just, put a reminder in your phone.
Is it going to be kickstarted or
no,
it's
directly
coming out, baby?
It's going to be available. And it will be available at midnightman.bigcartel.com.
Okay.
I think Andy's going to change the URL for that at some point. You can get lots of his comics anyway. So get your copies from there, whether it be digital or physical. Thanks to Rich from Comic Printing UK, who's printed it, and he always does a stellar job.
Are they your house yet?
They're on their way now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
And this, Gustavo was talking about writing for someone else. This is the first time I've done it. it was fun as well. So, and Andy absolutely smashed it.
We have to talk about that process.
Yes.
To show how you found that.
Yeah.
I cannot
wait. Maybe we'll discuss it a bit more on next week's show.
Yeah.
So MI666. Everyone loves the name. Andy thought of that. I'm not going to take credit for that.
That's a fucking golden name.
Yeah, it is a golden name.
Well, you let the artist come up with the name. What's wrong with you, my friend?
It's
you know who's in charge, the writer.
Do you know what? I'll tell you a little. I will tell you a little bit more about how the book came to be next week.
Look forward to it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. We didn't mention talk about this bit of news, but like the postal prices going up to ship to the US.
God, yeah.
What day?
A lot.
We're about to ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot. So. No, it goes up in July. So if you get a Kickstarter,
yeah, we got Atomic Hercules going out this week to the States. So that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes up an incredible amount. Yeah. Like it was like fuck. You know, I'm not sure if it's the same coming back. I wouldn't get getting stuff
saying
from
that. There. Yeah, a lot of the Kickstarters, unfortunately, it's I have to be prepared to sire your children in order to order a print book from the US now because it's so expensive to get it shipped over.
Oh, it's a nightmare at the moment.
Yeah,
there's some people. Well,
I still pledge for the digitals if I'm interested. I'll always go for the PDF if the book looks good.
Listen, I post to the States, and there's some shady fuckers paying like larging it on the postage at the moment in the UK as well. I see it all the time.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
naughty. You shouldn't be paying £4 to get a comic, an A5 comic posted. Yeah.
Mm. No, that's way too much. Yeah.
Made of gold.
Yeah.
I would do like. Try and get the cheapest thing. Like, if it's going to take 7 days, it takes 7 days.
Yeah.
Whatever, snail mail, but like, get it as cheap as possible to get the comic in the hands.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Good-o. That's a moan out of the way, isn't it?
Yeah. From that to recommending some lovely stuff for you people. I mean, I've already got a list. I love it when I've got a list that just grows. I mean, it's a bit of a nightmare when I've got to do all the fucking URLs and the. in the show notes. But we're all about giving you a lovely lot more fresh stuff to check out. And Gustavo, what would you like? You can kick us off. What would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners that they check out?
The first thing I have here is, let's see, I got it here. Have you seen Write It in Blood from Rory McConville, Joe Palmer, Hassan Osman, and I think it's O'Halloran. I think he's a colorist, maybe.
I am familiar with Joe Palmer's work, and I love his work.
His work is amazing. And I met him in Thought Bubble 2018. He was on my right side, and on my left side was Owen Maron. So it was, I didn't know if to look left or right at the time. They were sketching, it was crazy. But he has a comic right now. It's a 4-issue story, it's a thriller. It's on Gumroad, they have it right now. I already read the first one. It's looking very, very, very good. And I think it's only going to be four issues.
Awesome.
So it's a thriller, crime, gun bangers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice! Because cool. I know Joe's work is sometimes he does a lot of sci-fi type stuff in his work. So is this more of a standard like modern day?
Yes, just crime. Yeah, yeah, modern day criminals thriller stuff. It's completely standard these days. Oh, and nice. He's done all the art, but it's completely colored by Chris O'Halloran is a colorist, letterer is Hassan Osmane, and the writer is Rory McConville. And you can get it in gumroad.com, Rory McConville.
Oh, nice.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it looks very, very good.
That's amazing. Do you have any others before we...
I have 1,000.
go on, pick another one. We'll let you have another one. Go on.
No, but the thing is, it's things I like more than... I think this might be one of the newest ones. Yeah. I just finished reading Lucy Sullivan's Barking last Monday, wow, it was amazing. It was amazing. I think everybody should read this book. It's not an easy book to read, but I'm not saying in the end you feel grateful. It's such an astounding. It's a work of art. I think Lucy ran out of her copies, but Unbound should have plenty of copies, but it's a beautiful book. It's definitely worth a reread when I go over from the
first coming week. Out of Unbound. It still is it?
I think so.
Right.
Yeah, I think so, because I think Lucy Van she already ran out of her copies. But
right.
It's a beautiful book. Mm. And a third one I might mention that in some moment I will get my copies, because right now I can't go to any comic shop. Protector from Simon Roy and
Artem
Trakanov. Yeah, it's I even have a Simon Roy's. I subscribe to Simon Roy's Patreon. He's one of my, I don't know. He kind of inspires me. He has this same sense of building up world, doing research, and really, really like. Working and reworking until you get something that looks really real but completely different than any other writers. And well, he's also an artist, but in this case he's just a writer and maybe designer. But it's an amazing science fiction story that happens in I don't remember exactly, but I think more than a millennia has happened. So it's a post-atomic new civilization, but it's primitives of the people that build up again the world. And they think robots are gods, and everything is a mixed up. But it's very, very. It looks like a bit like an anthropological take on science fiction of primitive people.
You're right. There's like a tribal element to it, isn't there?
Yes. And it makes sense. Even in the first issue, he explains a bit what he's doing. People that were living next to the Hudson River now became the Hudsoni and stuff like that. He plays a lot in the Jesus. There's a lot of Christian tribal thing mixed with other bits that feels a bit like the kind of I know where his ideas come from. So and it makes a lot of sense. Makes a very potent work for you. Just see some tiny bit details that are very, very powerful. He puts even songs.
I have to say, Trakanov's one of our favourite artists on here. We love his
stuff. Yes.
Yeah, we're huge fans of his. Amazing. Yeah. Him all over the place. Yeah, definitely. Good-o.
And three amazing recommendations, dude. Blimey. We've got to do a lot of work to keep up with that. Who wants to go next?
Go on, one of you guys go.
Well, I haven't read anything this week.
Dan, I will tell you a book that you need to read. I know you'll love it. And it's a book I've mentioned before. I'm going back to the well, and I think I'm getting a reputation that every time an issue comes out, I'm going to talk about the fucking book.
I know what this is going to be.
But I'm not. I'm going to talk about the book because after a bit of a gap, my subscription to Comixology popped into sort of my account, and Darkness Chew. Outer Darkness 2, issue 2, was available to read, and I just absolutely devoured it, and it is fucking amazing. They continue.
You've had a wait for that one, didn't you? That's a good 4 month wait now.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I did not go back to read issue 1.
Right, good.
I did go back to read issue 1, and also, I've never read 2. It's one of those things that. One of the many gaps on my to-read list, and I'll probably get some omnibuses in the future. And obviously, a lot more people are going to know the creators because of Chew rather than Outer Darkness. And how do you cross over a crime comic about a guy that can actually solve murders based on the things he eats, and a horror Star Trek mashup? Well, this does it perfectly. The creators are. John Layman is the writer. Afu Chan is the artist and one of the covers. Rob Gilroy, I hope I said that right. He's also an artist and the cover. He obviously did Chew. Pat Brosso is the letterer with John Layman. And John Moisan is the editor. This is absolutely phenomenal, and it's very meta comic book storytelling. Because how do you... I don't want to say spoilers, but there is a lot of stuff. Like the way they get around Chew, I've got to mention it. If you read issue 1, it is dealing with the fact that Chew is fictional. It's in a world where Chew is fictional, and Outer Darkness is real, and they've basically brought the characters in from like a holodeck. And the character, yes.
Interesting. I'd wondered how they'd do it. I thought they was going to do something like Chew had died, and then they'd pulled his soul in.
The way they bring it in issue 1. Trust me, folks. I'm giving the game away a bit. You've got to read it for yourself because, like, there's a lot. The way they explain it is just brilliant, and it does it pretty quickly. Explain it in the first issue, and this second issue definitely sort of. Just a brilliant sort of. I'm never quite sure about meta comic book sort of narrative and how well it's done. But you have the two characters talking about like Tony Chu's like, what do you mean I'm fictional? And his partner knows all about it. And they talk about the creators. And I've got to read this bit. He says, it was created by obviously John Layman and Rob Gilroy. And he says, who? Yeah, exactly. Gilroy liked to add little doofy background gags to cover his obvious deficiencies as an artist. Layman had a shtick where he would tell an otherwise straightforward story out of sequence to make it seem more clever than it was. They seem like assholes. Total assholes. Look how they died. Huh. Can't say they didn't deserve it. So there's a tongue-in-cheek. John Layman has a brilliant sense of humour, which he works into. I mean, Dan, you've read Outer Darkness, so you know the sort of humour that it's a dark.
Yeah, I've read it. It's good.
We've all read it. I love it. Yeah,
And it feels more like an Outer Darkness story that has Chew in it.
Okay.
And if you don't need to have read Chew, I mean, I think most comic people are aware of what Chew was about.
Yeah.
And that's really all you need to know. And it just works brilliantly. It's got that Outer Darkness vibe. It is set, I think, between books 1 and 2 of Outer Darkness. It's a 3-issue miniseries. So this one's a halfway point, and hopefully it'll be back on track for the third one. It's going to be it's one of my favourite things to read. I was thinking, I love Outer Darkness, but am I going to love this? And they've just absolutely smashed it. Absolutely smashed it. I absolutely love it. It's made me want to read Chew more, And if you think I've given a lot of the game away, trust me, if you read this issue, I have not. There's a fucking lot of things that happen in this issue that are brilliant. So, Outer Darkness Tube, 2 issues are available now. Get them wherever you can. And when the trade comes up, I'm double dipping on that again. So,
yeah, I get that. Get that in trade.
There you go. So, yeah, if you can, Dan and Tony. I don't know. Issue one might be a bit cheaper because it's been a little bit of time. So
I'm not sure if they've done that now, have they? I think I had a look for that earlier. You know where it goes? Is it 3 or 4 months and then they drop it?
They drop it a little bit.
Yeah,
you might
look for that earlier, but might be soon.
Might be soon. So look out for it. Get caught up and get ready for the third issue. So that's my one. There you go.
Nice one.
Nice one, Pete.
Yeah, mine is Small Press. So this is a title that I've seen about for a couple of weeks now, and I thought, oh, I'm going to order this. I got chatting to the creator of it, a guy called Pete Dorey, along with Jason Wilson when we were talking about Brian Lewis, and we all got chatting about sort of Bronze Age comics, and I thought, well, this seems to be a geezer who's on the same wave next as me. And it's called Stan and Jack. It's about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Have you seen this? It's sort of...
No.
It's done... the titles are done as if they're their signatures. So, you know, the famous Stan signature, that's Stan and Jack, and it's about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. It's a collector's item, first issue. There you go. First issue is called The Doom Tube, and the second issue is called The Plot Parasite. So it's even got that sort of classic Marvel, DC kind of, you know, Bronze Age thing to it. American comic book size, black and white issues. I bought them online, appeared in my mailbox very quickly. Feels to me this is very meta as well. I mean, this is the point of the comic is meta, a bit like your one, V. And it feels a bit like there's a touch of the Dave Sim about it somewhere. Can't quite put my finger on it. I feel a little bit of the Dave Sim thing going on. It follows Stan and Jack. Both are, I'm going to say, funnily exaggerated versions of themselves, but kind of Stan is kind of an exaggerated version of himself anyway, isn't he? You know, yeah. I mean, Stan talks in his own sort of super hyperbolic poetry, and Pete turns this up with sort of, I'm going to read you a bit. So this is one of the first panels of Stan. Can my ever loving ears be deceiving me? Would a sanctified stalwart such as Stan the man pay a vital visit to his best buddy merely for the paradoxical purpose of demanding detailed doodles depicting daring do-gooders? You wound me, pilgrim. I mean, it's like stuff like that. It's like non-stop. You know, and he sort of wanders around, and Jack sort of, he's obviously wants pages out, so Jack just replies, well, how many do you want? You know, it's like that sort of thing. And he says, I think he says 72 pages by Monday. Stan turns around, talks to the camera, and then he's handed the pages by Jack. So he's thought that sort of, it plays on the jokes between them. There's a space-time portal opens up, and Kirby notes it was probably inked by Sinnott. They end up going through this sort of time portal, they end up in an anteroom, and there's a robot that looks like... Do you remember Herbie the robot that was in the Fantastic Four cartoon when they didn't have the rights to the Human Torch or something?
Human Torch.
That's it, yeah. And the this robot asks them, are you a writer, an artist, or are you Vinnie Coletta? And for a laugh, they say Vince Coletta, and they get shot. And then they say, wouldn't it be funny if we said Jim Shooter, and they get shot again? So it's constant referencing. It's an in-joke for us to read. There's characters in it called Shadowy Steve or Darkside Ditko or Darkened Ditko. They meet loads of, you know, comics legends, and there's little Easter eggs, like, constantly. For example, they bump into Gil Kane at one point, and Pete actually changes the artwork so that the stance that Gil Kane is in is one of the stances that Gil would draw on his covers or in the interiors of his books, you know? It's kind of drawn in that style. Then there's a close-up of Gil Kane's face, which is the kind of thing you used to get off Gil Kane, you know, in Warlock and all these sort of comics. It pokes fun, but it pokes fun affectionately. Occasionally, there's, you know, if you know your comics history, there's little ribs, little digs at people who appear. The amount of... I won't ruin it, but there's loads. Like Neil Adams turns up and is earnestly fighting for creators' rights and all this sort of thing. You know, they find a comic company, and it's called Brandeck Comics. The comics introduced, the actual first issue is introduced by a one pager by Mark Evanier. Do you guys know who he is?
No.
Mark Evanier is he wrote Grew the Wanderer. And Sergio Aragonés drew it, and he describes himself as, you might know me as Sergio Aragonés' straight man. back in the 70s. You know, he's like this, sort of little piss takes himself. And he says, for continuity buffs, the events depicted herein took place between page 23 of Commandy 7 and pages 9 to 15 of FF30, which obviously makes no sense because that's the wrong way round. And he says, and then he says, I can't be any more specific than that. And that is a piss take of Mark, I'm guessing, I haven't asked Pete about this, but I'm guessing that is a piss take of Mark Evanier when he had to give evidence for the, you know, that court case about Kirby getting his artwork and his due money back. Because he kept saying, well, I can't be any more specific than that. I think he got caught out a bit. There's some little issue one, issue two, both end with cliffhangers. Vaughan Bode appears. Do you know who he is? I think, was it Vaughan Bode? I never know how to say it. He's a sort of underground legend. He did, the one I knew him for was Cobalt 60, which is an Epic magazine, which I absolutely loved. It's Ralph Bakshi kind of, I think he quotes him as an influence, actually, for, you know that animated movie Wizards? Do you know that?
Yes.
Yeah,
the one, yeah.
Very sort of quite similar. It's just a love letter to comics. It's a love letter. You know, you can see Pete, well, the conversations I've had with Pete, he is, you know, he's a big comics fan. I'm going to say he's an older guy, probably my age. It's like a love letter to comics, which I really enjoyed reading. I had a blast reading it. I read it about 2 hours ago. I was going to go and do, I think I told you, didn't I? I was going to review Super Soldiers 1-5, but I just didn't have it in me, boys. I just couldn't do it. Yeah. head over to Kids from Rec Road, recroad.blogspot.com, and you can find out about the project. Go to www.petedorey.bigcartel.com, petedorey.bigcartel.com. You can follow him at Pete Dorey, capital P, capital D, on Twitter. I think he's pretty much finished issue 3 and he's writing issue 4 at the moment. So I think it's a bit of a lockdown project for him, I think. They seem to be coming out at quite a pace. But yeah, just fun. The back of issue 2 has got Lil, Stan and Jack, and they go and call on Steve Ditko, I think it is, and ask him if he can come out to play, and they're told no, he can't. It's just stupid stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm glad I bought it. I've seen it about and I thought, oh well, what's that going to be like? Is it going to just irritate me for being unreliable?
Yeah.
You know. And then having chatted to him, I began to get a bit of faith that he knew what he was talking about, and I bought it, and he does, and I haven't even quoted a third of the characters who appear and the references they use. And it's good stuff. That's my one.
Oh, brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Tons of comics to go forth, add to your wish list, go and purchase, and generally just keep you entertained on these long days and long nights. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. Don't make it dirty, Tony. You're always trying to make everything dirty.
I'm just showing off in front of Gustavo.
You are. You just show off. Every time we have a guest, you try to show off, don't you?
We haven't got a guest next week. It'll be fine.
Well, will it? But we hope you enjoyed this show and it made you laugh and you learned something, because we certainly learned an awful lot this week. And had a lot of fun. So if there's anything you want to let us know about, there's any events, any comics coming up that we should be aware of, just anything in general, really, that'll just make independent comic people happy. We're all about that. So email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Oh, it's been a long weekend.
Caught yourself.
Yeah, I caught myself. if you go to Twitter, you can follow us at The Awesome Pod. Well, we'll be probably posting up some who the future guests will be, retweeting our current guests, probably jumping all over Gustavo as soon as he announces some of his secret projects.
Yeah.
I'm still disappointed.
Very curious about that.
We're about to interrogate him off air. But if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where we post up the weekly episodes. And it's been briefly mentioned on here before, we have a brilliant art thread, as well as posting up the latest episodes and just great community chat about all things comics. No hard selling, just people who love the medium, talking about the medium.
Loads going on this week on there.
Yeah.
Loads of people. And a couple of first-timers posting stuff.
Yeah.
Loads of replies. Brilliant. I'm really pleased with it this week. It's really good.
That is the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk, which is one of the only places you should go to on Facebook, to be honest.
Yeah,
and it's full of great people. So thank you to anyone that gets involved in that, because it's a great community building up there. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, shout about it. Is that what iTunes people do? I don't know. But it helps get the word out about the show.
Yeah.
And more people listen to it. Is it like if you listen to us on a network like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife? What other networks are we on, Tony?
Yeah, we're on a podcast that isn't listened to much. It's called Pod. Twitter isn't actually the real world. It's not. It needs more listeners, I think.
No one will listen to that. but thank you wherever you heard this, whenever you heard this. If you're one of the alien space race that's taken over the world and has used us as food, we hope you enjoyed it as
objects.
Well. Yeah. Or maybe sex objects and then food. Who knows? I don't know.
That's true.
I just was wondering what's happening next. I mean, we had the fucking fires in Australia, got the pandemic. Now we've got
Dan, don't say that. Don't say that because you had a hideous week. So do not. Look, we can't.
But
mention
I'm all right now, so it's fine.
Oh, yeah. And that's when the shark ate him. where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz or neveronanything.bigcartel.com for my comics. I'm not on Twitter at the moment. You won't find me there, but I might be in a few days.
Yeah. You can find me on social media, probably shamelessly promoting MI666.
Yay.
At Jester Diablo and also on Instagram. And
going to do a live launch on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, like a video
That'd
one.
Great.
Like oh, I'd love that. Thing. Yeah. Do a Twitch. Do it.
I'm not doing it. The only time
Please.
There's lots of people
what
thinking.
What about live Periscope? That's easy to do on Twitter.
Why? Yeah. What are you trying to do to me? I can't.
What about like a sex
I
show?
I just about figure out how to record this thing every week.
Okay. What's that website you're on, Dan? Is it Real Friends? What's that one about where you're a simp? What's that one? Go on that one.
That's, oh, God. OnlyFans.
OnlyFans, that's it. Yeah.
I nearly fucked up the joke there, but I didn't. I managed to save it.
I thought he was on watchmelive.com, but apparently it's watchmelive. Anyway, yes.
We don't have to watch that for much longer.
If you can go to Instagram and follow my daily comic, Black. That's BLAK, the comic, on Instagram. Daily posts, and there's lots of crazy stuff to come. So there you go. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and Vanguard will start updating again this week at vanguardcomic.com.
Good stuff.
Yes. There you go.
Gustavo, once again, where can they find you? And your wonderful
They just have to Google Gustavo Vargas with double F, and you will find all my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Nice. And there will be lots of links in the show notes. So if you can't be bothered to Google, I mean, you'd have to be really lazy, but there will be links in the show notes.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening, folks. Thank you again to Gustavo for joining us. You've been an absolute legend.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. Unfortunately, it means you're going to have to come back in the future.
News you won't tell us.
Exactly.
that can be done. No worries. Thank you so much. It's been a total pleasure.
We're going to interrogate him now, so thank you for listening. Go forth, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, just stay safe, stay healthy, no matter what you're doing, just look after yourselves and just read loads of comics. Now's the perfect time for it. And from Dan, Tony, Gustavo and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Yay. I'm happy with that one.
Represent.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.